Before we jump into today's episode, we've got a free resource you won't want to miss. It's called The Robot Race: Could AI Ever Replace Humanity? A thought-provoking ebook exploring the rise of artificial intelligence, what it means to be human, and how Christians can think biblically in this new tech age. If you've ever asked, can machines become conscious? Or does AI challenge our faith? This is for you. Download your free copy now at premierinsight.org/resources. Again, that's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast. Before we jump into today's episode, we've got a free resource you won't want to miss. It's called The Robot Race: Could AI Ever Replace Humanity? A thought-provoking ebook exploring the rise of artificial intelligence, what it means to be human, and how Christians can think biblically in this new tech age. If you've ever asked, can machines become conscious? Or does AI challenge our faith? This is for you. Download your free copy now at premierinsight.org/resources. Again, that's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
I am absolutely delighted to be joined today by Dr. Max Baker-Hite, who's a tutorial fellow in philosophy at Oxford University. And he's published numerous academic papers and has recently released a book with Cambridge University Press called God and the Problem of Evidential Ambiguity. Max, let's talk about the argument from desire. I mean, he does talk about this in a few different places, but Would you just summarise what Lewis says about the argument from desire and how that points to God?
Yeah, thanks, Ruth. So, well, this one's an interesting one because I think there is a case to be made that Lewis didn't see it as an argument in the same way that the other two, I think, clearly were meant to be philosophical arguments. And part of the reason for thinking that is that it's more something you have to reconstruct from scattered quotes across his works.
Yeah.
So I'll just give a couple of those quotes. So one is from Mere Christianity, and this is quoted a lot. So he says, "If I find in myself a desire which no experience in the world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world." And then in Surprised by Joy, he says, "All joy reminds, it is never a possession, always a desire for something longer ago or further away or still about to be." Yeah, so if you were going to try and reconstruct this as a philosophical argument, I think the idea would be that there is this experience that is common to humans in general of longing for something, and that something doesn't seem to be anything within the world. When we kind of pursue our goals and we fulfill them, it seems like there's always something more. And Lewis wants to suggest that this longing is for something transcendent. Mm. And then there's this other component, which is the idea that longings or desires in us can be expected to have some real object which fulfills them. So yeah, I guess when you put those two ideas together, you have the ingredients for an inference to some kind of transcendent reality that meets those desires.
Yeah, and just to throw another quote into the mix, The Weight of Glory, he touches on this a fair bit as well.
Right.
So he says, "The books or the music in which we thought the beauty was located will betray us if we trust them. It was not in them, it only came through them. And what came through them was a sense of longing." And he says, he goes on to say, "They're only the scent of a flower we've not yet found, the echo of a tune we've not yet heard, news from a country we've not yet never visited. So the idea that you get like a taste of it here, but actually it's pointing to something else. Max, do we know where he got any of these ideas from? Were there any philosophies that he was drawing on in order to craft this argument from desire?
Well, That's a good question. I'm honestly not too sure about that, but I do think in a way the biggest source for it was an experience that he very profoundly felt, and it's one that he seems to have awakened to when he was a teenager, and he, you know, was reading these Norse epics and so on. And it, in Surprised by Joy, he talks about this idea of northernness, and it was this, he had some kind of feeling of like a yearning for this world that he was glimpsing through reading these Norse epics and so on. And it seems to have been an experience or a feeling that was with him throughout most of his life. And so I think really he was just kind of trying to do his best to describe that here. And so, yeah, I'm honestly not sure if he had any particular kind of authors in mind who he felt had also pinpointed this.
Do we know what some of the main critiques are for this argument from Desire, and how compelling do you personally find them as objections to what Lewis is saying?
Yeah, okay, so I mean, one of the main objections is that we can come up with an evolutionary explanation for why we would have longings or desires that we don't seem to be able to fulfill. And so Eric Weilenberg, again, his name comes up. So he engages with Lewis's argument from Desire in his book, God and the Reach of Reason. And roughly, Weilenberg's attempted kind of evolutionary explanation of desire, or whatever we want to call it, nostalgia, desire for transcendence, is that a creature that doesn't sit still for long, that is goal-oriented and is always aspiring for more, is going to be more proactive and is going to have a better chance of navigating its environment successfully, surviving, reproducing, flourishing, than a creature that is too easily content with its lot in life. So a good friend of mine, Slater Simek, has published a paper actually in which he replies to Weilenberg. And I think Slater is onto a good point here, that, I mean, he basically says, look, it seems to be at least as likely that a tendency to be dissatisfied with life would be counterproductive from a survival and reproduction point of view, insofar as it makes us prone to depression, prone to despair and so on. So it's at least not at all obvious that this kind of fundamental tendency to be dissatisfied with the world is going to be beneficial from a biological perspective.
Is there an objection? Just as I was reading some of this stuff that Lewis wrote, I couldn't help but think of my 3-year-old, who is obsessed with unicorns and princesses, and she genuinely has a desire for them to exist. That doesn't necessarily mean that they do exist.
So yeah.
Is there a sense in which, just because we have these longings for something, for a place where we don't belong, does that necessarily point to something that actually exists? Would that be an objection as well?
No, it would definitely. The way that Lewis appears to formulate, again, if we should really take him as giving an argument, when he says, you know, if I find in myself a desire which nothing can satisfy, then there's something that fulfills that. And so, yeah, the philosopher John Beversluys really critiqued this quite heavily. And he basically says this presupposes a faulty principle of the form, you know, if humans have a desire for X, then X must really exist. Yeah. Well, that doesn't seem like that's going to be a generally sort of true principle. Now, my friend Slater, though, he formulates an argument that doesn't fall prey to that objection, in that he frames the argument rather by saying, if we've got two hypotheses on the table, theism and naturalism, which one more strongly predicts that we would have this unfulfilled longing? And he argues that theism makes it more probable that we would have this unfulfilled longing than naturalism does. So then it doesn't rely on a principle that if you have a desire for X, then X must be real.
I suppose with all of this, we're assuming that there does exist this desire in us for something.
Yeah.
Do we know if there's any psychological research or anything similar to that does actually support or refute the notion of an innate desire for this transcendence that Lewis seems to be describing?
Yeah, I mean, potentially there is stuff that's supportive of it. So in terms of psychology of human motivation, and the idea that humans are motivated at a deep level by the need to connect our lives with some overarching story that makes sense of our place in the world. You could call that a desire for transcendence. That seems to be, you know, something that empirically holds up. You know, going back a bit further, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, this idea that there's a sort of pyramid of things that humans try to secure from the base upwards. And that, so once we've secured physical safety, food, shelter, you know, companionship and so on, we're still not going to be satisfied. We're going to want to pursue some sense of self-transcendence, as it's called in the hierarchy of needs. So yeah, I think what Lewis is saying, it depends on exactly what you think he's talking about there in terms of that longing. I think there is potentially some empirical support for it.
That's really helpful, Max. How do you think this sort of longing for, well, the unfulfillable desires, how do you think that connection, does it relate at all to philosophical discussions on happiness and human flourishing, or is it a totally different argument?
No, I do think it connects with those discussions. There's this idea of the paradox of happiness that Aristotle was aware of, that if you try to aim at happiness, you won't get it, but you can get happiness by aiming at other things that are worthwhile goals, and that happiness will come along as a byproduct. And I think Lewis would probably agree with that, but still Lewis would want to maintain that even if one pursues worthwhile goals in themselves rather than just pursuing happiness for itself, that nonetheless, in this lifetime, you're never going to quite get there. I think it definitely is relevant to these discussions and also to discussions of the meaning of life, which is an area that most people think that philosophers think about the meaning of life. That's kind of the cliche, but actually most philosophy isn't about the meaning of life, not in the way people think anyway. But there is kind of a recent burgeoning literature on the question of what it means for life to be meaningful. And I do think that Lewis's discussion of the idea that there's this deep unfulfillable desire is going to connect up. If that's true, that is going to have some serious implications for how we should think about the meaning of life.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
Have you ever wondered if angel stories are real or just religious folklore? This month, Premier Insight is offering a fascinating ebook called The Case for Angels: Evidence, Encounters, and Scripture. It examines real-life testimonies, biblical insight, and reasoned arguments for the reality of angels today. If you're curious about the supernatural or how to talk about it with skeptics, this resource is for you. It's yours today as a thank you for your gift to Premier Insight. Get your copy now at premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis to receive your ebook today. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Michael Bird, co-host of the Ask NT Write Anything podcast, and I want to ask you, what exactly is the gospel? You'd think Christians would generally agree on this, but actually, there are some rich and important differences in how the gospel can be understood. That's why I edited with Jason Maston a new book called 5 Views on the Gospel, part of the Counterpoint series from Zondervan Academic. We've gathered together 5 absolutely brilliant scholars: Michael Horton, Scott McKnight, David De Silva, Julie Ma, and Shively Smith, each offering a different take on what the gospel really is. Justification by faith, declaring Jesus is King, spiritual transformation, liberation from oppression. I mean, each view is, in a sense, rooted in scripture and history and contemporary mission, but they don't always agree. This book explores, what are we saved from? What are we saved for? And what does it mean to live a life worthy of the gospel. Whether you're a preacher, a student, or just curious, 5 views on the gospel will challenge and deepen your understanding of the good news of Jesus Christ. Available now wherever good theology books are sold.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. I mean, you've probably already touched on this and you may have just completely answered it with your last answer. But in our modern secular age, it's often been described as disenchanted. Mm. Do you think then, in light of that, actually this argument from desire could really resonate with people who are perhaps feeling quite disenchanted?
I definitely think so. People who comment on cultural issues are talking a lot at the moment about a crisis of meaning, perhaps especially among young men. And I think there is something there about this profound desire that's in us to connect our lives with a bigger story. And I think that's why figures like Jordan Peterson are resonating a lot, especially with young men. And so, yeah, I do. So here's something else that actually I wish Lewis had talked about more. And I do think he would be sympathetic to this thought, but in his own time, perhaps it didn't need saying in the way it does now. So I think you can hold on the one hand that there is this kind of, there's always going to be this gap, no matter how worthwhile a life one lives, you're never going to quite reach that mountaintop and feel that you have no kind of desires left over. And I do think that's true and resonates with my own experience. But I also think that there are ways of relating to each other and to the world that can be much more fulfilling than other ways of doing so. And I think, you know, again, that the crisis of meaning, young men, and the use of social media, especially the way that we relate to each other as human beings, is being changed so much by technology. And I think Lewis very much would be of the view that there are certain ways that we can organize our lives as individuals and as societies that are going to be much more conducive to human flourishing than others.
Max, you've touched on a few different philosophers that have drawn on this. Well, I'm not going to call it an argument because he doesn't necessarily call it an argument, but that sense of transcendence. Are there any other ways that it's been developed by contemporary philosophers or used or that they've been influenced by this argument?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, the main person who really has tried to sort of advance it as an argument in a strict sense is Peter Kreeft. Mm. But then the person that has tried to caution that maybe we shouldn't see it as an argument strictly is Alistair McGrath. And I think I'm quite sympathetic to Alistair's reading of Lewis on this. So the way Alistair wants us to read it is to think that Lewis is putting forward what Alistair calls a supposal. So suppose that there is a transcendent reality beyond the material world. Well, then it kind of makes sense that I would have this feeling, and it sort of starts to illuminate my experience of the world in a certain way that kind of has a ring of truth to it. I think that's quite a modest way of viewing what Lewis is doing, and I'm quite attracted to it myself.
Yeah, and that's something Lewis uses a lot in his fiction, for example, isn't it? Suppose there was a world where this, you know, there wasn't a fall, for instance, in the Ransom trilogy, what would it look like? So that sort of resonates with the rest of his literatures, doesn't it? I mean, how do you think there is a place for his argument from desire, whether it's an argument or not, within the context of his broader apologetics work, does it not feature too much in his apologetics?
I definitely think so. But here's the big difference between this and, let's say, the argument from reason. I think Lewis thinks you have to taste and see yourself. And that's why it is perhaps better seen as, there are some things I can communicate to you perfectly well with words. And there are other things that unless you have firsthand experience, I'm never going to be able to do justice to it in words. And I think that this joy, as Lewis calls it, this deep longing, is something that is something that he wants us to experience for ourselves.
Mm. And again, as we've said constantly, it's not necessarily an argument. It's a pointer towards God. How effective do you think it is as a pointer towards God if we were going to compare it with some of the more traditional arguments for the existence of God within philosophy?
I mean, you could almost see it as being a species of religious experience. And actually, I think it's that you often get these Hollywood celebrities who've, in a sense, achieved all of their goals in life. All their dreams have come true. And they pretty much invariably, if they speak about this, will say the same thing, which is that it's not ultimately satisfying. And I think those are quite powerful sort of witnesses to this phenomenon that Lewis is trying to point us to. So I do think that he has really put his finger on something that it probably is close to being a human universal experience. And I think maybe what he's doing is sort of trying to get us to see that this sign that most of us, are, if not all of us, are aware of, is actually pointing in a certain direction.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Max, as we draw all of this to a close, I'm aware we have touched on so many different philosophical arguments and theories and Lewis as a philosopher, but also what contemporary philosophers think about this stuff. I mean, you mentioned at the beginning that you became a Christian while studying philosophy. Lewis obviously became a Christian as an adult, partly through some of these philosophical arguments. And so he presents them as a helpful pointer to God, but clearly they don't necessarily stand alone by themselves. And there's more to the existence of God than just philosophy. If you had to whittle it down to why you personally believe in God, would it be partly because of the philosophical arguments, or is it an argument outside of philosophy that for you is the big reason that you personally made that leap towards God?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think for me, it was my conversion was a sort of kind of had a dual aspect to it. So on the one side, I was deeply attracted to Christian community and what seemed to me to be a more authentic set of relationships than I had experienced in a previous circle of friends at university that I was involved with to start when I wasn't a Christian at all. And that kind of really piqued my interest. But then I think it had to be a sort of both head and heart kind of thing. And the idea that, you know, at the very least, one doesn't have to kind of throw one's brain out the window to be a Christian. That was something that was quite revolutionary to me as a 19-year-old. And seeing the way that someone like Lewis, and then, you know, that really kind of opened up the way for me to engage more deeply with philosophy and engage with various Christian philosophers like Richard Swinburne and Alvin Plantinga. Certainly it would be cumulative in terms of which arguments I found convincing. It wasn't kind of any one particular thing, but as we've talked about, you know, what might be some of my highlights. But yeah, I think it was that sense that actually and I suppose Alistair McGrath does a really good job of articulating this sense of, okay, suddenly I've got a new kind of mental landscape that is illuminated in a way that I can begin to draw all these connections and there's so much richness here. And actually my worldview before I was a Christian was I was not really particularly coherent, and I really had never tried to systematize it and think it through. It was all kind of very bitty and muddled, and actually it was a really kind of exciting sense of adventure that I could begin to kind of explore all these concepts that connected with each other. And as Alistair puts it, you know, kind of suppose this is the case, well, it illuminates so much. And I think it's that sense of intellectual, you know, explanatory power that the way that the central Christian claims illuminate reality is, it's that sense, I guess, that is what it comes down to for me.
Well, Max, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for all your time today.
Thank you, Ruth. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.